Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm Jenna Ellis, and welcome to Just the Truth podcast, sponsored by the Thomas More Society, which is a not-for-profit national public interest law firm dedicated to restoring respect in law for life, family, and religious liberty. You can find them at thomasmoresociety.org.
I am fresh off of constitutional law camp. And what is that? Well, Patrick Henry College brings students who, there were about 55 of them today, ages 14 through 18, that were learning about the fundamental principles of what makes America great. So joining me now in studio for the full hour to do a deep dive on the Constitution and also some recent Supreme Court opinions that you really need to know about is our good friend Mike Donnelly, who is a constitutional law attorney himself. He's the senior counsel for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Definitely watch our previous episode on homeschooling and everything that you can do to make sure that you are an equipped parent to homeschool. And he's also a professor at Patrick Henry College. So Mike, thanks so much for joining me again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Jenna. Great to be here with you.
Yeah, and these discussions, I think, are so informative. We've gotten such great feedback every time that you're on the show because a lot of Americans want to understand our Constitution more in context. So first, talk to me about the constitutional law camp. That was so much fun to talk to these students. I had a really great time.
Well, it's so great to have 55 young people in a room to just talk about the Constitution for a week. And they're doing fun things as well. I find that fun.
I do too. I was like, wait, that's the same thing.
I try to keep them entertained. And we're talking about the principles of government. We're looking at some political philosophy, trying to help them understand the purposes of government, the foundations of government, the relationship between government and law, and morality and worldview. These are things that I know you talk a lot about here on your show, and trying to help them understand the history of our system of government. How did it start back in 1776? Of course, we have to go back even further than that, but we got it kicked off in 1776. And then going forward, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution, understanding what did our founders do with the Constitution, how revolutionary were those ideas that they put into practice? You know, it was the first time, I think, in recorded history that people actually deliberatively sat down and said, what kind of government do we want? What is it going to look like? And they debated it for 4 months during the hot summer of 1787 in Philadelphia. And we're living with the results of it now. Maybe we can talk about that.
Yeah, and we are going to be talking about that as a little preview for our Independence Day special. And so Mike is going to join me coming up this Monday on an Independence Day special that you don't want to miss, because we are going to do a deep dive into the history of America's founding. When we talk about the difference between constitutional law and the Constitution, there is actually a difference there, because a lot of people talk about constitutional law, but what they mean by that are just the Supreme Court opinions that say that they interpret the Constitution correctly, but we know that sometimes the court gets it wrong. So what is the difference? What do you need to know about why we celebrate Independence Day, why Kristi Noem should have those fireworks at Mount Rushmore, regardless of what Biden says? We were talking about that earlier. So definitely tune in to Just the Truth at 6 p.m. this Monday. We're going to do a deep dive way more into that. But first, Mike, for the purposes of this show, we do want to get into constitutional law a little bit. And we do want to talk about the opinions that are coming out of the Supreme Court even as we speak. And so one of the first ones that I find interesting, and actually several, that even against what I think the liberals are trying to say, we've actually had some 9081 opinions. And so that, a lot of people are saying, undercuts this whole idea that the Democrats should pack the Supreme Court. I don't think they should anyway. But you had an interesting comment about the 8190 opinions versus why the Democrats are looking at packing the court anyway.
Well, I mean, it's 9081 decisions are not that unusual in the Supreme Court. I mean, the Supreme Court takes very narrow issues that aren't always that controversial. It's the controversial ones, I think, that the Democrats are afraid of. You know, the Roe v. Wade cases, the moral cases, maybe some speech cases, maybe cases like Citizens United and government funding and money and those kinds of things. But oftentimes the court is pretty united on things. In the last few days, though, we've seen some very interesting constellations of justices appearing with that surprised me. Honestly, and of course, the case, the 8-1 case that maybe we're going to talk about is Mahoney versus BL, which was a free speech case.
Yes, and that one was an interesting 8-1 opinion. But before we jump into that, even today, you're talking, I love the term constellation of justices and some of their allegiances depending on, I think that'll be a new constitutional law term we've coined now here on Just the Truth.
Actually, we have to give the Supreme Court credit for that because in West Virginia v. Barnett, they talked about the True North constellation.
Well,
so that's where I
did,
pulled that out
there
from.
There you go. Okay, well, you coined it at least maybe in this context.
Okay.
But in terms of their allegiances and who jumps on to what opinion on majority and dissent, the one today, actually, that came out, that was what was surprising because Kagan actually joined the constellation of what we would consider conservative justices, and Alito jumped on somewhere else. So talk about that and why that's interesting.
Well, so that was Penn East, and that's an eminent domain federal takings clause case regarding New Jersey and whether the federal government can authorize a private company to exercise eminent domain over state land, okay? But yes, this is very interesting, very important case. I think we need to talk about this, and it just came out, and I've read the opinion. I need to digest it even more. But Justice Kagan joined Justice Barrett, Justice Gorsuch, and Justice Thomas. Now, ordinarily, you put Kagan over with the quote-unquote liberals, okay? And Justice Alito joined Justice Roberts with Justice Breyer, Justice Sotomayor, okay? And you would usually put Alito with the conservatives. So
what happened?
I don't know why Justice Alito did what he did. He didn't write his own opinion. We're
right.
Going to have to talk about that and figure it out. I don't understand it, but I'm with Gorsuch and Barrett and Kagan.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, and Kagan going like, wait a second. But I think that the point here overall is that rather than just saying, oh, whatever opinion a particular justice holds, that must be the right one. So in some of these, you actually have to look at the opinion and make sure, even if you're not a lawyer, look at the opinion, look at the holding, read through some articles on it from people you trust, like maybe Mike Donnelly, tune into Just the Truth here, and look for yourself rather than just be only about these types of opinions and who is aligning with who. So we're going to talk more about the Supreme Court when we come right back with Mike Donnelly here on Just the Truth.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back to Just the Truth, and we're continuing the conversation tonight that's a deep dive into the Supreme Court, some recent opinions with my good friend and constitutional law attorney and professor, Mike Donnelly. So, Mike, before the break, we were talking about these constellations of justices. I'm totally going to continue using that term now, but we were talking about how some, in some people's minds, of course, and I think in basically the American parlance, we categorize justices either conservative or liberal and say we have a majority of conservatives now in the Supreme Court. Why is that we categorize our justices this way? Because I thought they were all supposed to be unbiased.
Or impartial, right? Exactly.
Right?
I mean, of course, we know better. And that's why we had the drama and the trauma of three Supreme Court justices under Trump. And, of course, the worst of them all was Justice Kavanaugh, who was just absolutely treated in scurrilous fashion by the opposition. And then Justice Barrett, of course, you know, was treated a little bit better, but everybody was wringing their hands on the left about, oh, Justice Barrett, and now we're going to have, oh, there's a arch-conservative or conservative majority, a 6-3 rock-solid conservative majority on the court. Mm-hmm. This is what...
And Schumer going out and saying, I'm talking to you, Kavanaugh, I'm talking to you, Gorsuch. I mean, that was terrible as well. But yeah, I mean, talking specifically to justices, assuming in that context that they were going to rule a certain way on an abortion-related opinion.
Well, that's what they assumed, right? And we will see, because there is an abortion case coming, and we'll see what the justices do. We don't know what they'll do. We all have our ideas and our hopes about what they may or may not do. But, you know, they all said, oh, it's a 6-3, so, you know, and of course, you know, you can't count on Justice Roberts to be an arch conservative. He's not. You know, you look at Justice Alito, he was on the Penn East, you know, case on the side of the taking people. And
that we were just talking about.
We were just talking about in Justice Kagan. And then others. But, you know, they often look at it as to who appointed them. And they assume, well, if it's a Republican who appointed them, they're conservative. If it's a Democrat who appointed them, they're liberal. Of course, you know, you look at Justice Souter and Justice Kennedy. Okay, who would be examples against those ideas, who moderated and some, you know, said went liberal on the conservative side, and others said, oh, they came to our side, whatever. And so what you've got right now is you've got 9 justices who bring their own points of view to a variety of things, and that's what we've seen in the most recent cases, and especially this one on the takings clause. I mean, I think this puts a very interesting issue about state sovereignty, about the republic. I was reading Justice Gorsuch's opinion about the 2 different kinds of sovereign immunity. They're talking about what was going on in the summer of 1787 when the states got together in Philadelphia, and did they give up certain things? I love it. This is great. It's a great teachable moment for anybody who's paying attention.
So what then was in that case when we're talking about sovereign immunity, when we're talking about takings? Unpack that a little bit for the non-lawyers.
Right. Well, so when the states came together in 1787, it was after we had the Articles of Confederation, which were signed in 1777 by the states, and it was having some problems. You know, each state had their own currency. I mean, imagine going from New Jersey that might use Spanish doubloons or dollars to, you know, somebody using the British pound and trying to exchange and transact. So it was difficult. They were making trade deals with each other. They were squabbling over who owned this land and who got all the land to the west, you know, Virginia versus Pennsylvania. And so the founders were concerned about it. And they said, we got to do something different. So they got together in the Constitutional Convention and they came up with the Constitution. In the Constitution, there is the Bill of Rights, which came afterwards. And the Fifth Amendment, I believe, that says the government can take money, but it can't do it unless there's just compensation. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's called eminent domain.
Mm-hmm. So take property.
Property. I'm sorry, I said take money.
Yeah.
Take property from people without giving them compensation.
Right.
So this case, the Penn East case, is about whether a federal agency can authorize a private company building a pipeline to act as the federal government in exercising eminent domain and to take New Jersey's property from them without their consent. Okay.
Which is fascinating. So, I mean, so this is the federal government authorizing a private entity to go in and take land that belongs to the state.
Correct.
Because usually, I mean, a lot of the eminent domain cases that probably a lot of people are aware of deal with private property being taken by the government and then having that sort of taking. And so this is a really interesting transaction.
Well, it is, and always has to be. The taking always has to be for a public purpose, right? But the issue that Justice Gorsuch and the dissent that Justice Kagan joined was about sovereign immunity. Because when the states entered the Articles of Confederation and fought together, they came as sovereign entities. And, you know, and what Justice Gorsuch said is they didn't give up their structural immunity. Okay, there was this idea of structural immunity, which came with them into the Constitution. But then you also have this other item, which is called the 11th Amendment, which says that private citizens of another state cannot sue, or the federal courts do not have jurisdiction over lawsuits of private citizens against states, or foreign citizens against states, because states are sovereign entities and they can decide whether or not they're going to be sued. Okay, so it seems like either one of those would deal with this issue, and that's what Justice Gorsuch says. He says, and that's all we need to hear, because he's a textualist, which is good in most cases, and originalist.
And we've forgotten this whole idea that states actually do have sovereignty, and we have this whole idea that because we're all the United States of America, that somehow the federal government should just deal with everything, and if you have a problem in your state, go to Congress. And we have forgotten this principle. So that's Justice Gorsuch saying, wait a minute, let's go back to the history. Interestingly, Kagan joins this. But what was the holding from the majority then in this case?
Well, the majority basically said, there's an implicit.
We love when they use that.
This
term.
Is Justice Roberts.
Yeah,
okay?
Of course.
Yes, everything's not everything, but there's a lot of implicit things in his mind, apparently, including Obamacare.
Yeah.
I can't let that go. Anyway,
a lot of us.
Yeah. Okay. But he said it's implicit in the plan of the Constitution that the states
can just infer that somehow by his magical, you know, magic eight ball going back and going, oh yeah, I can see what they meant by this.
Well, he goes back and he does some historical analysis and he says, well, there's always been this thing called eminent domain, and of course the states knew about it, and you know, the state, this federal government is superior to the states, and it's implicit.
Long history and tradition.
Well, yeah, I mean, we can debate that, but Justice Gorsuch does the same thing, and he says, well, no, hang on, there was the sovereignty in states. You know, you can't just take property from states. And this is concerning, because if they can authorize a private entity to do this, what can't they do? And could the federal government just come in and, like, you know, for public purpose,
at
just take the whole state of New Jersey?
Yeah,
right?
and basically, yeah, and federalize. I mean, that seems a little crazy, especially in the current context of, you know, when we're talking about D.C. statehood and some of these other things, you know, that have practical implications. And so the majority then, which Alito, interestingly, joined onto, so what was their rationale for saying that this is okay other than, I mean, was it just the implicit nature of...
Yeah, it was really that. It was really that, just that. He said, Congress has passed a law that authorizes this, and the states knew that, you know, they submitted to the Constitution, which gives the federal government this eminent domain power, and of course it's implicit in this hierarchical understanding that of course the federal government can take the land,
and so if Congress can legislate on it, and so therefore, and this is what the Supreme Court does so often, is they will go back to, well, Congress can do this, and they will go to the legislation and derive an opinion on the Constitution without even really contemplating it, just saying, well, there's this provision, and because Congress has interpreted it this way, then therefore we're bound by that, which is interesting to me as a precedent problem, to say that, because honestly, when Congress and their legislation is in conflict with the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So they shouldn't just look to Congress for interpretation and basically being able to derive whatever rule Congress prefers.
Absolutely. And I like what Justice Gorsuch does in his dissent, because he writes separately from the other dissent that he joined, which was written by Justice Barrett, who talks about the same thing. But he's talking to the circuit court here, because the Supreme Court is sending this back to the circuit court. And he says, look, circuit court, you can't ignore these things that I'm talking about, even though they weren't raised by the parties in their pleadings. Okay, so he's trying to talk to the judges there and say, hey, by the way, here's this thing. You need to take this into consideration. So I hope they will take it into consideration, because the court reversed and remanded, so there's going to be further argument on this. But I think people really need to be talking about this. This issue of state sovereignty is right on the table, as the federal government has become so powerful, too powerful in my opinion, and the states are looking at ways to kind of push back.
Yeah.
And this is one area.
And these are things where, for all of the people who are really concerned about the direction of our country, how do we solve all of the problems of, you know, the Washington swamp and all of these things, it's fascinating to me that in the news we're really not talking about this. I mean, you have the article saying, oh, this opinion happened, but this isn't the top trending headline right now. You know, this isn't something that people are getting this type of analysis. And that's actually really frustrating, I think, that there are so many other distractions in the mainstream media. And when we as citizens want to make sure that our rights are preserved, that the Constitution as a whole and how it was originally intended is preserved, which includes state sovereignty, we have to be more aware of these things. So for people who are wanting to engage on this more and they're actually listening to this going like, wow, Mike, thank you. I would never have known this. How do they go and read some of these opinions and actually become more educated on these things without being, you know, at constitutional law camp?
Wow, that's a great question. Well, so SCOTUSblog.com is a really good place to go to, just if you want to track what's happening with the Supreme Court, what they're doing. SCOTUSblog is a great resource. I like to go to OYEZ, O-Y-E-Z, .org, which is the Supreme Court's website, and they post the opinions there. Every opinion has a syllabus. It's called a syllabus, which is not written for the layman, but it's pretty accessible to the layman, and it's a short synopsis of the key points of the case. And so you can go there to OYEZ and click on the case opinion link. You figure out which link that is. You can poke around a little bit. And then read the syllabus, and that will explain the case. And don't forget the dissent, especially when it's Justice Thomas or Justice Gorsuch. They write great dissents. And in this case,
really
Penn
do.
East... Justice Gorsuch's dissent is extremely digestible. it's very interesting, very good, explains what his issues are, and it's great. It's good.
Yeah, and I think that's really good advice, and especially for people when you hear that the Supreme Court has issued an opinion, go and read that first before you read the National Review's take or CNBC or the top trending headline, because that's generally from a reporter who may not even be a lawyer, but typically it's a perspective. And if you look at the headlines and you look at, oh, the Supreme Court smacked down this, it's a perspective. Go and read this first, be informed, and then draw your opinion and conclusion. So we'll be right back with more on Just the Truth.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Just the Truth, and I'm continuing my conversation with my good friend Mike Donnelly, who is a constitutional law professor at Patrick Henry College and is also the senior counsel at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Again, make sure that you go back and watch our special, our one-hour deep dive on homeschooling. I'm a homeschool graduate. It was a great conversation. So, Mike, before the break, we were talking, and then during the break, I was actually looking at all of these headlines because we were talking about this takings case that just came out today, and I was like, this is nowhere in media, and even the few that obviously they report on Supreme Court opinions. But I went, and Roberts is trending currently on Twitter, and this is 6:26 p.m. Eastern. But it's interesting because in the top hits on this, they're just talking about, this means that the last decision day will be two outstanding cases on campaign finance and voting rights. So just brushing past this takings case as if it's not important. And then the Reuters headline, which should just be straight reporting. Here's their headline, and this is why I'm telling you guys, you gotta go and read the opinion for yourself. Don't just take the headline as gospel on what the opinion actually held. So the Reuters headline is, U.S. Supreme Court backs pipeline companies in New Jersey land dispute.
Which is true. They did, because they voted for this private entity to be able to take New Jersey land. Now, New Jersey's against the pipeline, and I don't even know why. I mean, maybe they're environmentally concerned. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't like pipelines. I mean, you got the Keystone Pipeline that President Biden canceled. Pipelines are important.
But this frames the issue in an interesting way.
It really does. It really does. So we need pipelines to move fuel. Like, we just all put up with gas issues, a month or so ago when the hackers hacked into the pipeline company and everybody was concerned. You saw people going to the pumps, pouring gas into plastic bags and everything, which makes me wow, okay. Yeah. Anyway, but so we need pipelines to move stuff safely, but still people don't like pipelines in some respects. But on the other hand, states need to be able to make decisions for themselves and be able to resist encroachment by the federal government for whatever reason. Maybe you like pipelines. I don't know if I like pipelines or not, but I know what I do like is I like states being able to push back against the federal government, because the federal government has become too big, too powerful in all of its entities, including the Supreme Court. And here you got the Supreme Court saying, yep, Congress legislated. They can authorize a private entity to take state land, and that violates structural immunity and the 11th Amendment, and that's not okay.
And what I think, though, is interesting about this conversation with the Reuters headline, though, is that you don't get any of that with the headline that they generated. Because when they're saying U.S. Supreme Court backs pipeline, it almost frames it in a way that is not about takings. It's not about anything about the Constitution.
That's saying,
the Supreme Court is in favor of pipelines. That's what you get from that headline.
Yeah, they could have said SCOTUS opposes New Jersey in takings case.
Yes.
Or, rules that New Jersey land can be taken. Right?
Right.
How do you frame something is very important. That's a good point. I was just talking with the Con Law Campers today at Patrick Henry College, by the way, if people are looking for a place to send their children. Patrick Henry College, good college.
You will get Mike as a professor.
You might get me as a professor. I sometimes teach. I'm not a full-time professor there. But I was saying, people use words and phrases for a reason, because everybody has an opinion. Everybody has a perspective, and they always want to try to influence people to think something one way or the other, which you'd like to see the media being a little bit less biased or unbiased or neutral and trying to just report the news. But as you pointed out, Reuters is spinning it, trying to make the Supreme Court into the big, bad, anti-environmental pipeline backers, which doesn't really communicate what's going on.
Right, at all. And it doesn't communicate the crux of the case. And this is why it's so important for every informed citizen to do their own research, to look at what did the Supreme Court actually say. Don't take Reuters or, you know, these journalist activists' perspective for it. And don't just read the headline. Go and read the source material for yourself if you can. And if you still have questions, you know, great. You can always, you know, look up the terms that are the legal terms, or, you know, or have some other opinion. But at least then you've read the source material, you have the best evidence in front of you, and then you can go read people's opinions about it. And speaking of free speech, so that becomes a, and people's opinion, that was the 8-1 decision that I want to talk to you about as well, because this one was fascinating. This was the cheerleading case. So this was where a cheerleader went on her own, I think it was Snapchat.
Yep.
And she did not make varsity. She was on junior varsity at her high school for cheerleading. So she went and had, you know, a couple of very choice vulgar words and some opinions of her own that she expressed on her own social media. And the school then cut her or suspended her, I think, for a year from junior varsity for that content. And the case, it was very interesting to me, the 8-1 opinion, because we are all, as conservatives in general, advocates of free speech. Everybody's like, oh, good, Supreme Court backs cheerleader. That was the headline.
In free speech case,
in free speech case.
We all love free speech.
And everybody's, yay, you know, look at how overwhelming this was. The lone dissenter, Thomas.
He's not unused to being the lone dissenter.
Unfortunately. he's a great jurist. But this, to me, when I saw Thomas as the one who's dissenting in a free speech case, what's going on?
Well, it's very interesting. Justice Thomas, I have great regard for Justice Thomas. And I want to just stop for a second and go back one step. Because to understand this case, you have to also understand this point. How in the world is the Supreme Court of the United States even making rules about free speech cases in public schools in Mahoney School District, which I think is in Pennsylvania? Is that what the founders wanted, for the Supreme Court to be policing cheerleading squads and Snapchat pictures? I don't think so.
No.
Okay, so how do we get there? It's called incorporation. It's the incorporation doctrine invented by the Supreme Court. And I was a little disappointed that Justice Thomas didn't even nod his head at that much in his opinion at all. He talked about this doctrine of in loco parentis. He did talk about the 14th Amendment also, which is where the incorporation doctrine was spawned.
Can
I use sanctions? Spawned? Can I say? Anyway, was inferred, was discovered decades after, kind of, you know.
The legal fiction was generated.
Well, so incorporation, and it was actually free speech that was one of the very first rights of the Bill of Rights that was incorporated under the substantive under the incorporation doctrine that the court created in a case called Gitlow out of New York, which was a political speech case. At any rate, so this idea of incorporation is the idea that because the 14th Amendment says no state shall deny a person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Okay, and so what the court has done is they've taken that word liberty and they've tried to define it. And in Gitlow, they said, well, if freedom means anything, it certainly means freedom of speech. And the founders thought that because they included the First Amendment freedom of speech clause in the Constitution. And so we're going to apply that to the states. Okay? And that didn't begin it, but that was one of the big ones where they started incorporating. And since then, they have continued to incorporate virtually all, but not all, of the Bill of Rights into the Due Process Clause to apply to the states. Like one we like. Second Amendment, right? We like that the Second Amendment, according to Justice Scalia, applies to the states by virtue of substantive due process. And so that's kind of been the case. And it almost is like a Don Quixote mission to even be talking about this, because it's like everybody accepts this and they go along with it. And
dare we say it's super precedent?
It's maybe it is, but I don't like it.
Right.
At any rate, so that's why we're talking about free speech and the Supreme Court getting involved in deciding whether a cheerleader's Snapchat picture violates the U.S. Constitution, which I don't think the framers had any clue that that would ever happen, technology development, you know, notwithstanding. Mm-hmm. So in this case, the cheerleader, she was mad at getting cut. She posts this picture. And the majority says, you can't restrict this cheerleader. She's got free speech rights.
This isn't in class. You know, this is outside.
This was outside. Right. Mm-hmm. So it was outside. And so what Justice Thomas did, here's what he did. He went back to the 14th Amendment and said, what did the people who framed the 14th Amendment think about the doctrine of in loco parentis at the time they ratified the 14th Amendment? Now, I don't know that the framers of the 14th Amendment thought anything about in loco parentis, so he wasn't asking.
Which is not technically in there. This is a doctrine that has been derived from the Supreme Court, so thus, constitutional law versus the Constitution.
Exactly, exactly. But, that's context and understanding mm-hmm. the original
legislative
intent.
Legislative history, all of that.
Legislative history,
yes.
The original intent, the time, what was it? What did that mean? Because in loco parentis means in the place of the parent, mm-hmm. okay? And at the time, schools stood in loco parentis for children, and they could smack them, they could send them to the woodshed, discipline them, because that's what parents could do, and the school stood in the place of the parents. And that was accepted, totally accepted. And so if somebody did something outside, spoke disrespectfully about a teacher outside of school, and there's actually a case on this from the Vermont Supreme Court, which is mentioned in either the majority or the dissent, I can't remember, about how that was totally understandable, that the student could be disciplined for something they said outside of school.
Just like parents can discipline children out for statements they make outside the home.
Well, and that's what the majority said, right? So the majority said, ordinarily, the parents would discipline children for things that happen outside of school. True. Mm-hmm. And in fact, a lot of my favorite cases are mentioned which support the idea of parental rights. Wisconsin mm-hmm. v. Yoder, Pierce v. Society of Sisters, which says that the right of parents is without question, fundamental right of parents. So that's great to hear eight justices sort of talking about those kinds of things.
Yes.
But then they say that, so they say that is generally true, and therefore the school is going to be limited both by free speech principles, but also by this idea that it's really the parents' job to be doing that outside of school. And maybe we can talk a little bit more about Justice mm-hmm. Thomas's discussion a little bit
after
the break.
Yeah, and I think the inference there as well on parental rights, and if there's going to, in future cases, potentially be a clash between a minor's free speech rights over and above parental discipline, I wonder. I don't know. Well, we will be right back, and this is why this is so fascinating. It's always important to look at the constitutional law cases, how they impact you and your rights. So we'll talk more about this and much more when we come back on Just the Truth.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Back to Just the Truth, and I'm continuing the conversation with Mike Donnelly, who is a constitutional law professor at Patrick Henry College and also the senior counsel at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And Mike, before the break, we were talking about this case that dealt with the cheerleader and the free speech, and we kind of set this up to say, okay, here's kind of the world that the justices were dealing in. So what is the analysis in terms of the Constitution, and did the eight get it right or Justice Thomas?
Well, I like Justice Thomas, and I like his decision. I also like free speech, so the majority sets forth this three-part test about, well, parents generally are going to be responsible for policing speech, and when it's outside the school, the schools have less control, and they set up this vague three-part test, which Justice Thomas says, this is vague, brothers and sisters on the court. You can't do this to the circuit courts. You need to give them definitive rules if you're going to make a rule. And so he kind of criticizes them on that respect. But for him, it's actually pretty simple. He says at the time, if we go back to the 14th Amendment when this idea of incorporation and stuff comes from, what did people think in loco parentis meant? And it surely meant that the schools stood in the place of the parents, and at that time there would have been no question. They didn't have cheerleaders back then, I'm pretty sure. But there would have been no question that it would have been okay for the school to discipline a student for something that happened outside of school. And because that was they had that power under this in loco parentis doctrine. And he says the court does not really explain why they're departing from that pretty well understood legal doctrine of in loco parentis. And the eight, I don't know, I haven't fully digested the majority opinion yet to be able to understand what the reasoning was, just as Breyer wrote it, but it's, you know, it's like, we like free speech. You know, this speech didn't, it wasn't done at the school. It was done outside the school. And they talk about, yeah, but some speech, even though it's done outside the school, might impact the school. They said that this particular picture, which was deleted after like 24 hours, didn't cause a disruption at the school, although about 250 people saw it, and it caused a little bit of a flare-up because it got deleted and it resulted in this action. And they said, and so in this particular case, we're going to side with free speech.
But that goes directly into what Justice Thomas is saying of being very vague. So are they saying, you know, this is now situational, that some things, depending on the gravity of harm or implication or disruption of the school, that's how we're going to decide these cases? I mean, I think Justice Thomas is absolutely right that this doesn't give a clear precedent. And so for all of us who say, you know, yay, we're free speech advocates, at the same time, we should probably be concerned about how the precedent is set. And I mean, precedent and stare decisis and all these other things are interesting issues to contemplate anyway under constitution versus constitutional law. And we talked about that today too. Let's just talk for a moment about the concept of judicial review.
Well, sure. Yeah, this idea of judicial review. Does the Supreme Court get to review laws and which laws? And then does it actually have the authority to strike down laws, which is a little bit different necessarily than judicial review. I mean, the idea that courts have to review cases and make decisions is what courts are for. Nobody disputes that. But the question is, do courts sit as a super legislature with the authority to essentially act as a veto on state law? Now, this isn't state law. This is the action of a public school in a town in Pennsylvania or wherever it is. I think it's Pennsylvania.
But even acting as kind of a super legislature in designing this three-part test to say, well, hey, you know, this is now the rule.
Well, right. And so that's what they do. And so if they're going to sit as a super legislature, they ought to act legislatively, I suppose, and give clear rules that people can understand and apply, whether it's a school in a town in Pennsylvania or a legislature trying to figure out, can we pass this abortion law that restricts abortions this way or that way? Because in Roe v. Wade, the court said, we're going to supervise all of you states on any of your abortion laws. Right? And that's the problem with substantive due process, which is where we get the abortion decision of Roe v. Wade, mm-hmm. and incorporation, where we get this idea of the free speech, right? Because free speech is in the Bill of Rights. We incorporate it against the states. Substantive due process is the idea that the justices decide what rights are worthy of the highest level of protection as a fundamental right or not.
Versus procedural due process.
Versus procedural due process. But some, you know, some rights, might get less protection than others. And the justices have decided that they're the ones who are going to decide that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Which is a problem.
Right.
Okay, so that's substantive due process. And when they do that, they make decisions like Roe v. Wade, you know, which they claim to strike down laws in states regarding abortion back in 1972 or 3.
Or even in like Obergefell saying that, okay, we're going to strike down constitutional amendments, state constitutional amendments that specifically say that these states have declared by virtue of their own constitution, and they are state sovereigns, to say we will only recognize a marriage as between one man and one woman. And somehow the Supreme Court thinks that it can weigh in on that and strike down laws in 30, or constitutional amendments rather, in 30 plus states. I mean, this is acting as a super legislature rather than as the Constitution textually appears to, and again, this is the controversy, is to say, should we even have precedent, or should a judicial opinion be only as to the parties and the case of controversy?
Right, and the idea of precedent being, as you know, Amy Coney Barrett has talked about, super precedent, which is unquestioned Supreme Court opinions, kind of like Brown v. Board of Education.
Right, that you're never going to go back and revisit because
right.
it's so well established.
Right.
Unlike Feinstein is saying, well, you know, Roe versus Wade. Well, no, there is still a national conversation over the morality of abortion and the laws vary between the states. Clearly, that's not super present. It's being revisited right now.
Correct, exactly. And so she, right, coined that term. And so, you know, again, but the question is, do we as a people want to continue to put up with a Supreme Court of nine justices who, by a 5-4 decision, can wipe out 50 state laws, 31 state constitutional amendments or not? The framers never intended for that to happen. I am sure of that. I believe the framers of the 14th Amendment never intended that either. But the court is doing what human institutions do, accrue power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an institutional thing that happens over time. And it's, you know, Brutus in Anti-Federalist 15 called it back in 1788, 89, when they were debating about, the Constitution. He said, the court is going to become the death of our country because they're going to do this little by little. This is exactly what he said. Over time, no one's going to notice it until all of a sudden they have this power. And we're like, hey, how did that happen? Too late. And everybody just puts up with it.
Right. Well, and you have some of the justices like Gorsuch, who is very famously against the administrative state and, some of these things. But at the same time, we still have these nine justices who, look at going back to what we said, all of the drama and the, 24/7 news coverage for President Trump's three appointees. That was in 2016. Scalia's open seat was the number one or at least at the very top voting issue for people. Well, why? Why should the Supreme Court have that much power to determine who we're voting for president? That is never what the founders intended.
No, it was supposed to be the weakest, and that's what Alexander Hamilton, your favorite founder,
said.
He said that the judiciary would be the weakest of all branches, with neither force nor will, but only judgment.
And he intended well, and I love him for being such an idealist, but I think that Brutus was correct in that vein. And I think then where we go from here, and everybody's question in the next segment that I want us to address is, so what now? Obviously, court packing is not the answer. We don't just want to put other justices that now will side with every whim of political legislative intent. We don't want to have a judiciary that is runaway. We don't want to have the nine-robed monarchs that are up there just continuing to say that. So
follow the Constitution.
Yeah, follow the Constitution.
I don't know.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? But this is where we need statesmen instead of politicians and judicial activists. Absolutely. But that's great in theory. How do we get there? We're going to talk about that with Mike Donnelly.
We have 2 minutes to figure that out.
Yeah, exactly. When we come right back with more on Just the Truth.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to Just the Truth, and it is already our final segment here, but definitely tune in to Just the Truth, well, every Monday through Friday, but especially this Monday when we are celebrating Independence Day, and Mike Donnelly is going to join me for a very special episode of Just the Truth where we're going to be talking about our founding the Constitution, not constitutional law. So, Mike, in this last segment, we've kind of previewed, I think, okay, here's all of the problems. So, now what? Do we just have a Supreme Court that says, okay, we're just going to scrap all of this ridiculous precedent. We're going to go back to the beginning and we're just going to undo everything and start from scratch. What can happen now and what should happen?
Well, can you imagine the Supreme Court saying, okay, let's just forget the last 125 years and start new? I can't even imagine.
Reuters headline would be hilarious, though.
No, it's just not possible.
Right.
Okay.
The practical reality.
It's not going to happen. People have relied on these things for a century.
A lot of them are good. We still have some, some protections in terms of, some things that are there. We are still here together speaking truth.
Occasionally,
that's a good thing.
Occasionally, maybe more than occasionally, the court will come out with a good decision based on these substantive due process things. But again, I prefer to go to my state legislature and decide for myself in my state, are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? What are we going to do?
Yeah, and not that's have the court how the founders weighing, intended it.
They did. And not the court weighing on everything, like whether a cheerleader's Snapchat picture violates the Constitution of the United States or not. So how do we fix this? Well, I said, the Constitution. And here's the other thing.
Okay. And look, by the way, look at how thin this is.
It's really not
right?
that thick.
That is not, if you go, my backpack and every law student's backpack is weighted down with all of the books that you have to read and just volumes and volumes of this is the Constitution, that's the operative. This is actually the text. It's not that hard.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. It's not. It's actually very accessible.
But
the analogy I want to make is that, I'm a guy, and I'm actually the kind of guy who doesn't mind asking for directions. In fact, I think asking for directions is very efficient. I made a wrong turn.
He's a unicorn, is what he's saying.
Made a wrong turn. Which way? How do we go? Well, but most people, like, they don't want to admit it, and denial. And so they'll go down the road for miles, and then they'll get lost, and they won't ask for directions. Okay, people, we made a wrong turn 100 years ago. Are we going to admit it? Are we going to turn around and go back in another direction? Hello, justices? I don't know. But Congress can do something about it.
That's a very, very interesting solution.
In fact, may I read the Constitution?
Absolutely, yes. Okay. Because, you know, this is just the truth.
Article 3, the judicial power of the United States is vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges hold their offices during good behavior for a lifetime. Okay, then it says in Section 2, in all cases affecting ambassadors, public ministers, consuls, and those in which a state is a party, the Supreme Court shall have an original jurisdiction. In all other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction, both as to law and fact, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. Okay, which means Congress could get rid of every single federal court, and they have actually done this before, back in the day, way back. They got rid of all the circuit courts and reconstituted them because the Democratic Republicans didn't like the Federalists, and they wanted to get rid of them. But they couldn't do it to the Supreme Court because the Constitution wouldn't allow them.
Right. So only the Supreme Court is required by the Constitution because of that word may.
May. Well, and the power to create is the power to destroy. So Congress has the power to create the inferior courts and can destroy them. But it also says, with law and fact under Section 2, and with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. So Congress has the authority to instruct the Supreme Court as to law and fact, in my view, as I read the plain meaning. Mm-hmm. Now, the Supreme Court doesn't like that. And in a case called Bernie v. Flores, they actually said, no, Congress, we decide how to interpret the Constitution. You don't. This was actually in the context of religious freedom. And I don't like that case, but we can talk about that another time. Okay. But at any rate, but I think Congress has some authority here. Congress could jump in here and say, hey, guys, no, we don't like substantive due process. But does anybody have the political will, the political courage to attempt that?
Well, that's ultimately the question, because if you look at where Congress is today, if you look at even the state legislatures, everybody is focused on something totally different than actually solving the problems that need to be solved, because these are the things nobody's going back and actually reading the Constitution. When is the last time, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer love to stand up there and say, the Constitution, this and that, but have you ever actually seen them read it? And come out and say, oh, this is the proper authority under the Constitution that should be regulating this process. Here's what we need to do. And this is where, if we weren't so divided as a country, and it wasn't just about the necessity of both parties keeping each other in power, because the Democrats need the Republicans need Democrats, right? And this eternal clash, then they would actually have to come together as statesmen and women and solve real problems.
Well, yes, and that would be wonderful if they would do that. You know, we've been fighting these battles from the beginning, the Federalists versus the Anti-Federalists, and these are important issues. And I don't have any problem with people having passionate opinions for or against. You know, I think we need to debate them. But this is a structural problem. We need to debate this because the future of the Republic is at stake. The Republic is struggling, and there's lots of reasons for it. We need to understand what those reasons are. I think the federal government is way too powerful today. It has become too powerful. We've caused that to happen by passing amendments like the 16th Amendment, which gives them the power to put their hands in our pockets and take our money anytime they want. We passed the 17th Amendment, which basically took away the states as states' voice by popular election of senators. And the 14th Amendment due process, substantive due process, lets the Supreme Court do whatever it wants, whatever it can reason its way to with a 5-4 decision. How are we going to get this back? Article 5 does allow us to amend the Constitution. I think that could be done. You know, can we get 30 states to call for a constitutional convention, and then can we get something through a constitutional convention and then get
ratified.
3/4 of states to ratify it that would say, hey, Supreme Court, no, you don't get to rule over us anymore. Wow. That'd be cool. That'd be great. We need that, but...
But do we have the political will of people who have enough backbone, who are in positions of authority, to do something like that? And I think it's important what you said, that this is a structural problem, because when we talk about being originalists, when we talk about being constitutionalists, that doesn't mean that we have to actually like all of the amendments that have been passed, or if you're an advocate for repealing, for example, the 16th or 17th Amendment, that doesn't mean that I don't like the Constitution. It means that we understand the principles of America's founding, which is what we're going to talk about on Monday with the Declaration and America's Founding Principles. We are principled constitutionalists, and we can always create a more perfect union, and we can make sure that because our founders gave us Article 5 and the ability to course correct and actually have structural items that we can correct and say, this is not good, we can go back in and do that. And
well, let's not forget, we've done it before.
We can.
It used
Absolutely.
To be illegal to sell beer and wine and drink it.
See? Well,
and we
there you
repealed
go.
It.
Yes, there.
Whether you like to do that
but
or not.
But that's what we have to do. And so this is so important to not only understand the Constitution, but understand how we can preserve and protect America's principles.
That's it for this episode of Just the Truth. I'm Jenna Ellis, and we are sponsored by the Thomas More Society, which is a not-for-profit national public interest law firm dedicated to restoring respect in law for life, family, and religious liberty. You can find out more about the Thomas More Society and the incredible work that we do there at thomasmoresociety.org. And I will be back tomorrow and every Monday through Friday here on Just the Truth.